Off and rolling Tuesday, August 5th, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on XHedge underscore Kuhn 71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on XHedge Dunning 99. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, man?
Man, nothing much. Nothing much hanging in there. Just got an interesting bit of news coming across our timeline. If you're on social media, Shedeur Sanders going to start coming up on Friday? Because Dylan Gabriel and Kenny Pickett are out, and Joe Flacco is old, so they're not going to make him play in the preseason. I think we need to open up on that. We'll talk about that, and I'll get to some preseason games of consequence going into week one of the preseason after the Hall of Fame game. We'll also have some NFL storylines to get to throughout the day. Trip around the NFL at 5:30, that will be big time to do that. College football, it's ranking season. I need to get to the CBS Sports 136. It was released today, and obviously this is CBS Sports, including our guy David Cobb, who joins Monday, Wednesday, Friday, getting all together and deciding, you know, who should be at the top of the list? Who should be our top five teams? How should we rank these? So it's an amalgamation, a full sort of put together of all of their rankings, 1 through 136, and how it all turned out. We'll talk about Memphis, Tennessee, Ole Miss, where they all made it on that list. As far as guests are concerned, Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock. And then 6 o'clock, bring on Christian Fowler. I have a couple of things to bring up with Christian. One, of course, we have the Tigers getting some votes in the coaches' poll. What does he think about this team going into next year? Obviously, it's nice to get those votes and for people to think and coaches to think you're a top 25 team in the country. But what does it actually look like when they hit the field? We'll talk to him about that. But also, Micah Parsons and that deal. From a Cowboys fan, and I know Cowboys fans at this point are, you know, they're used to this, but how much different is this Micah Parsons negotiation than CeeDee Lamb's, than Zach Martin's, than Dak Prescott's? Does it feel different? How much more concerning is it that it's Micah Parsons, a guy who's very outspoken, asked for a trade request? The agent's not being worked with. How much more concerning is that? I'll talk with Christian about that at 6 o'clock. Blitz at 6:30. But that is the show for you. Shedeur Sanders, though, has been named the starter coming up on Friday night for the Browns against the Panthers. How about that? A guy who was listed as fourth on the depth chart when the initial depth chart came out. He is going to get the nod because Dylan Gabriel and our guy, Kenny Pickett, are hurt. Now, the Browns also signed Tyler Huntley yesterday. I don't know how much time he's going to have to actually play in a game, considering he just got signed yesterday. He's going to have to learn the playbook, and then we'll see if he gets some run. My first question is there going to be anybody to relieve Shedeur Sanders, or is he going to play all four quarters? Because Joe Flacco clearly is not going to play because he's 40 years old. Other two guys are hurt. Do they have an emergency quarterback being Snoop Huntley? Is that the guy who's going to step in, go make something happen? Right? Like, that is my question. But I will say my initial reaction to this is this may be one of the most consequential football games for any one player that I've seen in the past decade. Shedeur Sanders has not made a lot of headway in Browns camp, even though he has played relatively well. There seems to be an underlying sort of frustration from Browns fans about that. There seems to be an underlying frustration from the staff and from the front office about the distractions and the conversations that are being had. I completely understand that. But it feels like Shedeur Sanders is going to have to come out on Friday and really make some noise so he can move up this depth chart, opened up as the fourth string quarterback behind Dylan Gabriel, behind Kenny Pickett. So this feels like a very, very consequential preseason game, if you can even say that.
First off, I'm happy to see that the shoulder, you know, injury or issues
right.
that he seemed to be dealing with earlier, you know, late last week and early this week, aren't going to prevent him from being able to play in this game. I am very much rooting for Shedeur Sanders and for him to have a highly successful showing in this one. Now, that being said, it doesn't make any sense what the Browns have done with their quarterback position in a lot of ways because, you know, the coaches and the staff, they're not incorrect about Shedeur Sanders being a distraction during camp. And it's not because anything of that Shador Sanders is
he
doing.
Said
I want to be
the
clear.
Right things.
He's saying and doing the exact right, right things. He's doing everything he should. It just doesn't make any sense at all to take Dillon Gabriel and then to have taken Shador Sanders. I don't understand why they decided to do that. That being said, I am very, very happy that he's kind of getting the first shot at this. You've asked me a couple of times who I think the quarterbacks are going to end up on the roster are. I think Joe Flacco, without a doubt, he's going to probably be...
Something about that Flacco.
Something about Flacco, the way he throws that ball. He's going to be their starter day one. There's no doubt about that. In my opinion, I think it's going to be Shador Sanders and Kenny Pickett, and I hope that he goes out there and he is able to show in this preseason game why I have that confidence that he is going to be on their roster and he's not going to be their practice squad quarterback. I think he's more talented than Dillon Gabriel. I think he has far more potential than Dillon Gabriel. You know, it's nothing against Dillon Gabriel. I think that he can be a good quarterback. It's just I think that if you're making me choose between someone like Shador Sanders and the potential that he has shown
right.
and could have versus Dillon Gabriel, I think I'm just going to go Shador Sanders 10 out of 10 times. He feels like an easier risk to take on a rookie quarterback than someone like Dillon Gabriel, who kind of feels like he is who he is. I just don't think that there's some
right.
next level that he yeah. can go to. Where Shador Sanders, I'm like, no, that guy has another level that he could potentially go to. And we've seen him have high success in college, where Dillon Gabriel was a really good system type of quarterback.
Yeah, now that's what I wanted to focus on. Like, the potential there with Shador Sanders, it honestly outweighs the rest of that quarterback room by a fair margin. By a pretty fair
margin.
Yeah,
like, margin. We know what Flacco doesn't have anymore.
Like, when we talk about the Browns' quarterback position and what they're planning to do going into the future,
mm-hmm.
right, you're not planning on Joe Flacco being there for long. He's 40 years old. He's a placeholder quarterback at best, right? And mostly he should be a backup quarterback, but the Browns' quarterback room is in flux. We get that. But, like, there's a 0% chance that Joe Flacco is going to run out for the next 5 years and be the franchise quarterback for the Browns. Now for Kenny Pickett, let's go to Kenny Pickett. I've seen Kenny Pickett.
Right.
He came out of school at Pitt as an old quarterback that was supposed to be who he was when he stepped foot into the NFL. I haven't seen it from him. Steelers uniform, Eagles uniform, whatever uniform he's been in, he's just been meh. I think he is a long-term backup quarterback in the National Football League.
Agreed.
And you know what? That's okay for some guys. He was picked 23rd overall. You had high hopes when he was in Pittsburgh. Never came to fruition. After that, you sort of give up on the guy because his skill set does not lend itself to some franchise quarterback going forward. Dillon Gabriel. Let's get to him. I want to believe in Dillon Gabriel. I truly do. But he's 5'11", barely can see over a line, doesn't have some rocket arm. His legs, they're okay, but at the same time, he's not that escapable, especially at the NFL level. I think the injury risk is very high because he's 5'11", and he's got a slender build. If he gets hit by these NFL defensive ends, guys coming off of the edge, he plays in the AFC North, TJ Watt coming off the edge, Alex Highsmith coming off the edge, Odafe Oweh coming off the edge, that could get very, very ugly for him. So I don't really have this overwhelming hope, even though they picked him in the third round, they may have this hope, that he's going to be some franchise-changing quarterback going into the future. There's one guy in that room, truthfully, and I think if you don't acknowledge this, I think you're lying to yourself. There's one guy in that room that gives you some level of hope in regards to being a franchise-changing quarterback. He was thought of to be a first-round pick. Obviously, he ends up getting picked in the fifth round because of distractions and the pre-draft workouts and or lack of workouts and the interview process, all that. But Shador Sanders is the only guy, in my opinion, in that quarterback room who gives me any semblance of hope going into the future that he could be a franchise-type quarterback, face of the franchise guy.
Yeah.
He's the only guy. Now, do I think that'll come to fruition? Time will tell. I'm not totally sold. I think there's some things from a physical standpoint that do hold Shador back. He's not overly athletic. He's arm is a B-minus, C-plus. You know, as far as, like, his arm talent is concerned, he's pretty accurate. I think that's the big thing that I do latch on to. Seems to be a really good processor of information.
Mm-hmm.
When he's out there, he can sit back there and get 1, 2, 3, back to 1, those types of reads. But I don't know why the Browns are approaching this the way that they are. Now, I think there was a case made on Unsportsmanlike today by Evan Cohen, our morning show. that he was actually okay with Shador being listed at number four, a four-string quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, because he thinks that, you know, in a lot of ways, you give challenges as an organization to the guys you believe in the most. You want to see them overcome obstacles, and that's the sort of idea behind that. But I don't view it like that. If we've learned anything about the Cleveland Browns, it's that they're not a very smart franchise. So this was a franchise who went out of their way to bring in a quarterback with 25 sexual assault cases attached to his name and sign him to a fully guaranteed deal, the only fully guaranteed deal for $230 million that we've ever seen in the history of the game. And I think he still has the record for guaranteed money on a contract, Deshaun Watson. So it's not like this organization has some method to their madness. They've been dumb. So I don't really understand their plan of action here. It seems like they are a bit out over their skis, a little uncomfortable with Shador and the amount of attention he's getting, and it feels like a bit of a punishment to put him at fourth to a certain extent. I think Shador, though, when we look at that room, at, you know, big picture, maybe a 30,000-foot view of that room, he's the only guy, in my opinion, that has the talent, the ability to process information that could lend itself to being a future quarterback, starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns.
I think you've touched on something that's very important. When it comes to the Cleveland Browns, they are in a position to where they almost have to be selling hope to their fan base and hope for the future. And Joe Flacco, he can't do that because he's up 40. There in age. Like, he's not going to be your future. Kenny Pickett? Hell no. He's just not going to. And Dylan Gabriel, again, it's not because I don't think that Dylan Gabriel has a place in the NFL. I think he might. But the Browns aren't in the position to have a mediocre type of prospect or one that doesn't inspire hope within the fan base or doesn't inspire excitement.
Right.
The Browns are a bad football team, period. So when you're going into the season next year, one of your goals is you've got to show something to your fans. You've got to show something for the future because you don't want it just to be a completely lost season where you're in the dumpster, when you're in no man's land of the
where
NFL.
Where by week 18, you have no hope for the next season
and
you have 3 wins.
The only option they have at quarterback. Oh, also Deshaun Watson.
Oh, yeah.
Hell no.
Yeah.
It's going to provide hope. The only option that they have is Shador Sanders and inspiring any sort of hope in that fan base and for the future of their team. Because you're not going to get it from anybody else on your roster right now at the quarterback position. That's why it's so confusing for them. The way they drafted and the way they've operated this offseason with that quarterback position really doesn't make any sense when, in my opinion, if you were going to take Shador Sanders, you should have just taken him when you took Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah.
You should have just taken him then. Because then you could have had a quarterback room that actually made a little bit more sense. Because you would have had Joe Flacco, okay, he's going to be the starter. Kenny Pickett, he'll be probably the backup. And then you have Shador Sanders there waiting in the wings to fill in when he can. And he can inspire hope in the fan base. And he can be the quote-unquote future of your franchise. He can wait. He can wait his turn. And if you're so bad this season, he can get some opportunity to make some sort of run. But now you have this weird battle for who's actually going to be on the roster between two rookies that was just so unnecessary. So, I mean, tonight, or I'm sorry, when he starts in this preseason opener
on Friday,
I am hoping that he goes out there and he shows why he should have been taken in the first round, why he was projected as a first round talent. And it is one of those, if you're Dylan Gabriel, it does feel like that your career with the Browns could kind of end before it even began. Because if Shador Sanders goes out there and is just good, it's going to make it really, really tough, I think, on the Browns because of the attention that Shador Sanders brings with the fan base and the media to get a fair shot this preseason. Because if he's already dealing with injury and he already doesn't have that allure or the aura that somebody like Shador Sanders could have for the future of your franchise, and Shador has a good showing, whoo, that feels like a lot for Dylan Gabriel to have to overcome.
Yeah, but this franchise, they're confusing. They're confusing.
It's very
I don't
confusing.
Really understand their plan. I don't understand, you know, what you know next year is going to hold. They just took two quarterbacks in this draft, and there is a thought from Browns fans that they could be at the top
Arch,
of the draft and they could
get
Arch or somebody else out there next year. You
I
just
don't
took
understand
two
it.
Rookie quarterbacks. Shouldn't you be trying to develop them? So we'll see what happens. Now, I do think, not only with this storyline, but some other storylines around the NFL, there are, it's a pretty, and bear with me when I use this word, I think it's a relatively consequential preseason for a lot of guys, and quarterbacks in particular.
Sure.
Right? So, like, there's three games that I'm going to pay attention to pretty heavily this week. One, I think you should pay attention to them as well. Sort of in this number three spot, I have Colts at Ravens. We know that the Colts put out their first depth chart yesterday, and what did it have? It had Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones as an or, right? They were slashing as an or at the first-string quarterback position. What does that play out like? How does this look as the, by the time we get to week one of the season? Who's going to be playing the actual games? We know that Anthony Richardson is a guy that they took very high in the draft. Lot of talent, 6'4", 245 pounds, runs a 4.4, throws the ball a quarter mile. Can he actually step into his own? Now, I don't like how the Colts have played the Anthony Richardson hand to this point. I really do not. They took a developmental prospect who didn't win a lot of games when he was playing at Florida, who clearly needed to learn how to progress through his reads when he was sitting in the pocket, relied on his legs too much. They took that guy and immediately started him off the top of the season of his rookie year. And inevitably, Connor, we called it at the time, and then every single step of the way since then we've been calling it. Inevitably, he relies on his legs like he did at Florida, and he gets hurt. I feel like this is the year where Anthony Richardson has to show something, mm-hmm. not only in the regular season, but in the preseason, to be able to actually show something in the regular season. He has to beat out Daniel Jones. He has to beat out Daniel Jones. Now, Shane Steichen, the head coach, has said that Anthony Richardson is the guy who will run out there first coming up this week, again on Thursday. So we'll see how it looks. I still have some hope in what Anthony Richardson can become. I feel like we give up on quarterbacks way too early. He's 24 years of age, still has all of those physical attributes that we knew and we loved around the draft when he was taken by the Colts. But he's got to show it, beat out Daniel Jones, and then step into being a face of the franchise for the Colts. Number two, obviously, we already brought it up, but Browns at Panthers. Going to have to go with that one. Shedeur Sanders is starting. I think everybody's eyes are going to turn directly to that. What does it actually look like? I think they'll probably, if I'm guessing, make it easy on Shedeur. A lot of hitch routes, a lot of slants, things like that. Maybe every once in a while they take a shot, but they're probably going to keep it relatively simple. He hasn't had time to really take in Kevin Stefanski's full playbook. But if he plays well, this puts pressure on not only the Browns, but every quarterback in that quarterback room. Joe Flacco still thinks he can start. He talked about this offseason. He's not a mentor. Don't want to be a mentor. If Shedeur Sanders has a good game coming up on Friday against the Panthers, even though it's preseason, it puts pressure on every part of that franchise to throw him in there at some point during the regular season.
Yeah, it's also a ton of pressure on Shedeur Sanders, too, because he can't go out there and stink either.
Yes.
Like that is, you know, that is a possibility that could happen during that game, and it would, you know, I think that the coaching staff might not hate if he goes out there and he isn't amazing, because it would take a little bit of pressure off of how they use him this upcoming season. But I think that most of us are rooting for him to go out there and have a lot of success, because we see the potential that this type of guy has out there on the football field. But I tend to agree with you. I think that they're going to try to protect him to some extent with making it a little bit easier on him. Now, I'll also say it's Carolina too. That helps.
Well, if they're playing their starters, I mean, NFL starters are NFL starters.
I did want to ask you, how have the reports been on Shedeur in camp?
It's so hard to read.
Yeah.
It's so hard to figure out what he's actually doing. Obviously, we can look at the ESPN Cleveland completion percentage tracker with touchdowns and interceptions. That only tells us so much. What I've noticed, though, is he's not getting real reps. It's like he's begging for reps with first and second team, and they won't give them to him. Even though this quarterback room, you should be rotating guys in with the ones. Why not? You don't have a real answer at the quarterback position. You're likely going to start Joe Flacco, But at the same time, like, do you really want Joe Flacco to start 17 games this year? Give guys opportunities. That's the one thing that I have read from a reporting standpoint, is that they're just not giving Shador the time of day that he quite deserves. Now, he'll start coming up on Friday, so we'll see. We'll see. And number one, and you probably thought this would be number one for week one of the preseason, the Browns and Panthers, you probably thought that would be that. I'm going with Dolphins and Bears. Now, Ben Johnson has yet to say if the ones and the starters are going to play in this game. But I would tell him, I think you need to see what you got in Caleb Williams. I think you need to show people what's going on with Caleb Williams. Very up and down training camp based on reports I've read. Just still doesn't quite understand how to work on schedule at a very high clip. So I need to see, whether it's this week, next week, going into the rest of preseason, I need to see if Caleb Williams is latching on to the Ben Johnson system. Because if Ben Johnson, here's my opinion, and this has been my opinion the entire time since Ben Johnson got hired by the Bears. If Ben Johnson can't get the most out of Caleb Williams, I'm not sure there's a coach out there that can get the most out of Caleb Williams. I saw Ben Johnson with Jared Goff run the league, have the best offense in the league for 3 years running. That's with Jared Goff, a guy who was a throwaway by the St. Louis Rams. If he can't get it out of Caleb Williams, we're going to have some real conversations about how we evaluate quarterbacks and who we're putting best prospect in the NFL draft, who we're putting that moniker next to going into the future. But Ben Johnson, Caleb Williams, that has to work out. That has to look like something. It has to look at least on schedule. He has to look somewhat comfortable in the pocket, or I'm going to be out on the Bears before we even get the season started.
What happens if Caleb Williams just has a similar season to the one he had last year? How is it viewed?
Not a step in the right direction. Now, here's the thing. If he has the same stats, tell me what the win-loss record is, and then I'll have a better feel for how it's viewed. I think that they have more organizational integrity than they've had the past few seasons. You have Ryan Poles getting an extension this offseason through 5 years, and that's the GM, and then you have Ben Johnson as a head coach, 5-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
You have this runway of 5 years to really see what you have and what you have done and the decision makers you have in that organization. But I don't know how it'll be viewed if Caleb Williams looks exactly the same as he did a year ago. Can't play on schedule, makes stupid mistakes with the football, runs around a little bit too much, hangs on to the football. I don't know if people are going to have the patience to stick around and continue to go on and on and on with Caleb Williams and this Ben Johnson thing.
Because, you know, if he had like 3,500 yards, 20 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, is not bad for a rookie season. It's actually a quite good rookie season.
It's good, historically, especially.
But to your point, it's about how he looks during the game. Does he feel comfortable in the pocket? Does he know how to do the time management? Because, you know, those interviews have come out and more have come out about that game where he didn't know how to handle the end of a football game, and they relied on him to be able to call the shots out there. Now, you could also say that a head coach shouldn't just be relying on his rookie quarterback to be able to know how to handle that situation. It's one of the reasons he no longer has a job. But you just gonna need to see improvements with comfortability from Caleb Williams. You know, I was watching Good Morning Football, and I think that Kyle Brandt had a really good piece about Caleb Williams and kind of the perception of Caleb Williams, because I think that, you know, a lot of people are doing this thing during camp where they're seeing footage of Caleb Williams and he may not look fully comfortable yet in
Ben
Johnson's system.
There was the video yesterday where he was throwing it at the target
It was really interesting. He pointed out, he was like, this is camp. This is when you're supposed to be learning these things. This is when you are kind of supposed to look uncomfortable. And he said, because there was a tweet that was like, oh, Caleb Williams is already in midseason form. And it's like, Well, Caleb Williams only threw 6 interceptions last year. Like, he looked uncomfortable in moments, and he didn't know how to manage the end-of-game situations every once in a while, but he wasn't turning the ball over at a high rate. He was still making his throws. He needs a better offensive line. He needs a better offensive system, and it feels like he's going to have that this year. So that's why you need to see the improvements.
You need improvement.
It's one of those deals where you can't just look at a player and say, oh, well, it looks like he threw a duck in that video, or, you know, he threw an interception in camp, so he's going to be terrible. Because, you know, it was a comparison that I think was a bit of a reach, but I'll give him credit for the point he was trying to make. He compared it to Lamar Jackson after Lamar Jackson's rookie season. The next training camp, he struggled. From all reports, Lamar Jackson was not very good in the training camp after his rookie season. You know what Lamar Jackson did that year?
Won the MVP.
He won MVP.
Yeah.
And it's like sometimes during training camp, if you see a player look uncomfortable, it's because they're learning and they're growing.
I can tell you from being inside a training camp at the University of Memphis, they throw all exotic blitzes at you. And here's the truth that people need to latch on to. Whether it's college football fall camp, NFL training camp, defenses always outpace offenses. There's a lot of things that need to go right on offense before you add new install. On defense, you're flying around, playing 100 miles an hour. You have your responsibility, but things can go right for you regardless if you miss your responsibility, yada, yada, yada. The offense is still trying to learn along the way. So defenses are always ahead of offenses at this time, unless you have, you know, in all likelihood, like you look at like a team like the Bills or the Chiefs, who have a lot of continuity, especially at the quarterback position, they could potentially be ahead of the defense. But when you have a young player like Caleb Williams in a new system, you can guarantee that that defense is going to be ahead of that offense. And I guarantee that head coach is going to, with the talent that Caleb Williams is and how much he wants him to learn on the fly, you can guarantee that head coach is going to tell the defensive coordinator, hey, light him up.
Yeah.
Make sure he learns, you know, how to check into a different protection if you're showing blitz, right? You need those learning sort of moments to show on film to be able to teach a young quarterback. So I think I agree with that for the most part.
Yeah, well, and of course, today now you're getting reports from camp and videos from camp of him just absolutely throwing missiles to Roma Dunze. And it's just, you know, training camp is so funny. Because you can overreact and underreact to everything, especially when it comes to your quarterbacks. And I think with Caleb Williams, there was just so much pressure for him to be this 4,000-yard quarterback immediately out of college.
The only one in Bears history, by the way.
And if he didn't hit that, he was looked at as some failure. When it's just, I don't think that the narrative about Caleb Williams actually matches what has happened with Caleb Williams. Because when you go back and you look, like you said, the Bears were just a complete mess last year. The coaching staff had no idea what they were doing, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and they weren't setting you up for success. He had talent around him, but if the schemes weren't correct, it doesn't matter how much talent you have if the coaching was incorrect. So it's, I don't know, when you look at Caleb Williams and you actually watch his tape from last year, he had a good rookie season. He's got room for improvement, but it was a good rookie season. Was it a great one? I wouldn't say it was great, but it was good. Like you said, this year, you're looking for just that step in the right direction. You're looking for him to feel more comfortable, to not break out of the pocket the first time he feels pressure. Step up into that pocket. Try to find your wide receivers and anticipate things more. And just know how to control that clock a little bit better.
That's the thing. I want to see, more than just about anything we've mentioned to this point with Caleb Williams, I want to see him have command of that huddle.
Yes.
And I know that sounds abstract, and I know that sounds corny. But last year, and I know the situation was terrible. He didn't have an offensive staff that was worth a damn. Now he does. I need to see him have command of everybody in that huddle, down in, down out. And have command, like you were mentioning earlier, of situational football. He was very bad at that last year. You expect that from rookies. But you have to teach rookies, as opposed to what they did last year. They just assumed that he would know what to do in a 2-minute situation late in the game, yada, yada, yada. But I need to see him have command of the huddle and have command of the situational football that will pop up throughout a game.
Now, a Bears reporter, Adam Hodge, said, you know, for the he was in response to Kyle Brandt's video. He quote tweeted it and he said, For the record, I only have Caleb Williams down for 5 interceptions in 10 training camp practices, and one of them was a fourth down when he had to just throw the ball up for grabs. So that's what I mean, is that it sounds like that this narrative that's being created around Caleb Williams just isn't the reality of Caleb Williams. And I, for one, think he's going to be a good quarterback and can be successful for the Chicago Bears and thought he was successful last season. It's just there are some things in place now that I think will help that success, and now it is on him to really make improvements, because a lot of it is his just comfortability on the field. We know he has the talent. The players are around him now. He's got the right coaching staff. Take the baton and run with it. But it's just, there's been this, I think, narrative being created this offseason of he's close to some sort of bust where he really struggled last year. And I just don't think that was the truth.
No, it's not the truth. It's not the truth. I also don't think it was the truth that he was a ready-made generational prospect coming
Correct.
Out of college.
Right.
Which I think that was the.
I feel like you were saying that all year.
I said that
year.
The entire. That was. He was 7-5 his final year at USC and had his struggles.
Yeah,
and he was never a guy who played on time, on schedule, on a consistent basis. One of the biggest things that he was great at is getting outside of the pocket, breaking tackles, holding on to the ball, and making something happen downfield. In the NFL, that still happens. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, the best quarterbacks in the league still are able to do that, minus Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow's unbelievable on schedule. That's what makes him who he is. So, like, that's something that's great to have, to always keep your eyes downfield regardless of the situation and make something happen for your team out of nothing. But you also, as an NFL quarterback, on a down-to-down basis, have to be able to play on schedule. Mm-hmm. That was my biggest issue, and why I really took exception to him being called this generational, one-of-one, Andrew Luck-level prospect when he came out of USC. It never made sense. Now, Connor, if you're very high on him, per ESPN bet, for him to throw for 4,000-plus yards this year, be the first quarterback in Bears history to throw for 4,000 yards, you can place a bet on that for plus 250. Decent odds.
Decent odds.
Not great.
Not as
not
good
great.
As I'm gonna be honest. Not as good as I expected.
What
when
you
started.
Expect them to be? Really?
I don't. It's never happened before.
Well, it's never happened before. But this is the best opportunity in the best era with the best type of quarterback and the best type of coach for it to happen for the Bears.
I thought I was gonna get at least like plus 500 out of it. Like plus 250s. I don't know. It feels like. I don't know if he's going to do it yet. Like, if he can give you 3,800, that's a big step in the right direction. I don't know if I'd place a bet on it. I also wouldn't be shocked if he was able to do it because of the way Ben Johnson runs an offense. It feels like it's going to give him a lot of opportunity to hit that 4,000-yard mark. I'm trying to go back and just look at how many quarterbacks last season actually hit 4,000 yards. It was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Only 6 quarterbacks last year hit 4,000. Patrick Mahomes didn't even hit 4,000. Man, I don't know. I would say he's going to land somewhere around like 38.
Plus 250.
Nah.
All right.
Pass.
All right, I got you. All right, now episode 1 of Hard Knocks with the Buffalo Bills releases tonight. What should you expect? Let's talk about it on the other side. 92.9 FM ESPN. Episode 1 of Hard Knocks, Training Camp Edition, releases tonight, and it's the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen who are going to be blessing our screens. And when it comes to the Buffalo Bills and Hard Knocks, what should we expect? How much fun should Hard Knocks be? Now, I think the past few years have fallen a bit short. I just think that. Now, Jets with Aaron Rodgers, year one, that was phenomenal. I think when you talk about all of the characters that were involved there, notably just Aaron Rodgers himself, I think it really turned out well. But I think other than that, a lot of these Hard Knocks training camp editions have fallen relatively short. And why is that? Connor, I think we've missed out on what really, especially through my childhood and my teen years, made Hard Knocks great. I think we miss out on the human story lines, on the undrafted free agents and their path to getting on the team or getting cut. I think there's been a very strong hold from a lot of these organizations that get focused on in Hard Knocks. I think there's been a very strong hold on what can be shown and what can't be shown. It's always relatively entertaining, but the one thing I think we have missed is the human storylines, undrafted free agents, late round draft picks, and making the team or missing the team. By the end of the season, you saw all of those storylines. You saw the elation of guys who just, you know, never thought they had a chance, had to go through rookie minicamp, get signed to a training camp deal, and ultimately make the team. You see just the pure happiness that they get from getting that news. You also, on the other hand, and I know this is tough to watch at times, you saw guys get cut and their NFL dream dying right there on your screen. But I think when you saw that, when that was more out front, the entertainment value of that series went up. Now, I know that's tough to see, and I think they've tried to cut that out of the series a little bit more, but I want to see them get back to that. But when it comes to the Bills and, like, the actual sort of, you know, personalities, characters, what are we looking forward to? Josh Allen, you know, he'll get married. Maybe they'll show that. Got married to Haley Steinfeld this offseason. And the entire roster was there, so there's that. I think a sleeper for this entire series, this entire season, is going to be Deion Dawkins, their left tackle. He is an absolute personality. He's very fun to listen to talk, so that's one I'll be paying attention to. But outside of sort of the normal names, who are we looking for to be sort of the character carriers of this season for the Buffalo Bills?
First off, I want footage of Josh Allen having to watch Sinners and some of the scenes that Haley Seinfeld had to do. I would just like to see his reaction. Try to hold composure during a few of those scenes. If you've seen Sinners, I think you know exactly what I am talking about. I do want to add, I thought it was very funny the way that you set that up, where you were like, one of my favorite childhood memories was watching people get cut on Hard Knocks.
It was both sides of that, cutting both ways.
I'm in full agreement with you though. Like it was really sad and in some cases devastating to watch some of these players get cut that you would get connected to over Hard Knocks. But I think it's what made the Hard Knocks experience special. So it needs to be a part of the program. I understand that it is invasive, but that is the whole point of Hard Knocks, is that you get connected to these guys. And, you know, I would also make the argument that the players who get cut on these shows, the more publicity they have from having people get connected to them and seeing their journey, probably help them find landing spots more so than the players that get cut in the dark of the night that we just never see. But when it comes to personalities, Keon Coleman. Okay. I think that Keon Coleman's going to be a personality, and I am going to be interested to see someone like Ed Oliver. Like that's, you know, former adversary of
Don't
you.
Remind me.
Ed Oliver is going to be on the show as well.
Golly, man, why you have to remind me? You just
it wasn't to be me.
You took me back to Houston, Memphis, circa 2016, 2017, where we have fourth and ones and short yardage where he's lined up directly over me and I have to try to drive him off the ball in an inside zone, putting on that brave face, never thinking that I ever had a shot. He was one of the only guys I ever went up against where I truly felt outmatched.
Well, it's
not Robert Kimdichie, not Breland Speaks, not some of these guys that we played, you know, SEC caliber talent, not Dorrance Armstrong, who's a defensive end still for the Cowboys who played at Kansas. None of those guys. Ed Oliver is that one guy I would point to. It's like, I truly, watching film, felt outmatched, and when we got out there, felt outmatched. And it's hard to admit that as a competitor.
Does it make you feel any better, though? Like, while it was happening, were you just like, oh, yeah, this guy, he's an NFL player. Like, without
yes,
a doubt.
100%. And he was one of the top recruits in his class. Somehow, you know, Houston gets their hands on him as a five-star.
Somehow.
So, like, we knew, yeah. We always knew. We always knew that he was going to probably be an NFL player.
Uh-huh.
But it's one thing to just, like, know that is the reputation of a guy. And actually, it's a whole other thing to actually have to go up in person against that reputation and see what makes him that NFL guy. I never quite felt that with Robert Kimdichie, and maybe that's why he had a very short career and was out of the league very quickly. Maybe that's why it is. But Ed Oliver's made a name for himself, has a new contract with the Bills. He's still He's still doing his thing.
Well, that speaking of contracts, you know, the Cook stuff is going to be interesting during Hard Knocks if they get into it.
It does not sound like, obviously it does not sound like the Micah Parsons situation.
Correct.
He hasn't asked for a trade. But it does not sound like it's very contentious either way.
No.
Sounds like eventually he'll get his money, but there may be a settling on both sides and a bending the knee on both sides.
Are we?
Which is how negotiations are supposed to work, mind you. I think that's the problem with Jerry Jones and what he's running into. He just wants to win negotiations. Sometimes negotiations are a back and forth, two-sided thing. Sometimes you have to make concessions. Each side has to make concessions. That's how it works most of the time.
Are we ready for the or do we expect a big DeMar Hamlin thing?
I think so.
Do you think it's going to be episode one?
It's got to be highlighted, right?
Has to be.
I have plenty of time.
Has to be.
I think it'll be highlighted episode one. And forgive me for using this terminology, because it was a while ago at this point. I think they will do it episode one to get it out of the way.
I see.
You know what I mean? Like, I hate to use that terminology, but I think that's what I would do if I was directing.
My thought was, I wonder if they would do it in the middle of the season. So it doesn't, I wonder if they don't want to have to waste time in episode one on it, because it has to be discussed. Like, there has to be a moment.
Of course.
If DeMar Hamlin is on a team, he needs to be highlighted.
Oof. Easy for you to say.
For obvious reasons.
My gosh.
But I wonder if maybe that's like a mid-season type of storyline, because it isn't as relevant as it would have been if the Bills were, you know, the Hard Knocks team last season.
That's what I'm saying. I think this is going to be
We'll
review this and figure it out by tonight and talk about it tomorrow, but I think it'll be early and often, and they'll get it out of the way. And maybe it'll be mentioned throughout the season. I imagine it will. But I think the big sort of reveal, the big DeMar Hamlin sort of moment, I think that'll be an episode.
What do you think the overarching storyline or through line of the season will be? Will it be the Bills have been there, they're ready, and they're just trying to get over the hump? Because every single Hard Knocks has like a through line.
I mean, you can even get more specific than that. You're correct. I'm not saying you're incorrect.
Yeah.
It's going to be about number 15 in red. That's what it's going to be.
It's not going to be about Mitchell
Trubisky.
Josh
Allen, Patrick Mahomes, is Josh Allen ever, even though he's won an MVP, even though he has been actively better than Patrick Mahomes the last 2 years, and he's unbelievable in the postseason, go look at his numbers if you don't believe me. The conversation is going to be about, can he ever get over number 15? How much of a thorn in his side will he continue to be throughout Josh Allen's career? I think that will be sort of the through line, the main plot that we're watching throughout Hard Knocks.
How much pressure do you think is on their coach to win this year?
Well, Sean McDermott's had pressure for a long time, hasn't he? Like, I mean, since he's had his hands on Josh Allen and Josh Allen's been playing at an MVP level, he's had pressure.
I suppose what I'm asking is his seat warm?
I think I would answer that very similarly, Connor.
It has been warm.
I think that everyone's been talking about, for at least the last 2-3 years, since Josh Allen stepped into being MVP, that type of guy. Everyone has said, if they can't get over him this year, you're going to have to take a hard look at Sean McDermott. That's the conversation, copy and paste, preseason, postseason, mid-regular season, late regular season. It's always talked about. I don't know if I feel any different than I have, though, the past 2 or 3 years since it's been discussed. I mean, there's pressure on that team to finally get over the top. But I think that's been there for all of those guys for the last 2 or 3 years. And I don't think it's changed. I don't think anything drastic has changed.
If they don't get it done this year, do you think the biggest why would the biggest reason be? Is it their wide receivers? Their lack of talent there? Because when you look at this roster, you're kind of like, damn.
Well,
there's
not really anybody there. I think that's
Keon Coleman, but like,
that's the thing.
Here's already hurt.
That's the thing. When we ask why the Bills and Josh Allen can't get over top of the Chiefs, it's not about the Bills. It's not about Josh Allen. It's never been about them. It's about 15 in red doing unreasonably good things and just figuring it out in the postseason. Like Josh Allen, to this point, I just want to make this very clear. He has played 13 games in the playoffs. He's 7-6. Ignore that for a second. But 13 games, 65, nearly 66% completion percentage, 3,359 yards, and here's the kicker, 25 touchdowns, 4 interceptions.
Pretty
That's
good.
Just passing. That's just passing. So, like, I struggle with, like, okay, what's the reason that the Bills and their team's going to fall short? Like, pick out D-tackle, offensive line, tight end, pick that out. I can't do that because I just know that the Chiefs exist and Andy Reid exists and Travis Kelce exists and Chris Jones exists and Steve Spagnuolo is one of the best big-game coaches in the history of the NFL as a defensive coordinator. I don't think it's anything the Bills have done wrong. I think it's what the Chiefs have done right.
Okay, let me change the question a little bit.
Okay.
If there is an area in which the Bills need to improve the most, what is it?
Probably wide receiver.
All right.
And they've lost a little bit in their secondary as we've gotten down the line, so maybe there. But I think they're as well-tooled a team to win a Super Bowl as anybody else in the NFL. They just have not been able to defeat the mighty, maybe lucky, I don't know how you term them, that Kansas City Chiefs team. And I don't think it's their fault. I think it's just the Chiefs are that voodoo magic in the postseason, the way they've been built, the experience they have. Sometimes that is what gets you through. Even if you're playing a team that's more talented and has played better than you throughout a regular season, even in the postseason.
I'm really curious to see how many times the Chiefs are mentioned on Hard Knocks.
I would venture to say a lot. Do we want to set an over-under?
Well, that's what I was trying to think, and I just feel like the
25 and a half.
Well, because the first episode is going to be, they always do a bit of a recap of last year, so they'll absolutely be mentioned. And when they talk about Josh Allen, his MVP, Patrick Mahomes will probably come up, even though it was really just Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. They'll still probably mention Patrick Mahomes in that conversation about, well, Josh Allen he's the top of the quarterbacks now in the NFL, and that like group of Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, and Patrick Mahomes. So 25, I was going to say, I was going to say 20 and a half.
I'm saying so mention. This is mentioned.
Yeah. So we're about in the same ballpark, I think, of how many times we expect them to be mentioned.
Yeah, I know one guy, though.
It could be a drinking game with Old Dominic.
It's true. I know one guy, though, that'll be very frustrated with mentions of the Chiefs on Bill's Hard Knocks, and that's Jeff Calkins. And you know what? He's scheduled to join on the other side very conveniently. So let's go ahead and grab a break. We'll talk to Jeff when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.